Good morning, everyone. We're in Revelation chapter 13, so go ahead and turn to Revelation 13. A couple of quick announcements, and then we'll have an opening prayer. Just a reminder, if you are able to get me a snapshot or two, just one or two snapshots, try to get them to me no later than Wednesday for inclusion in next Sunday morning's little PowerPoint at the beginning of our lesson. And it'll all fit. I guarantee it'll be tasteful and everything else, but it'll fit, okay? So try to get those if you can. I've got a few already, but not very many. And those of you who are working to fulfill some of the Christmas list on the bulletin board, just a reminder that it's there on the bulletin board. And I think, I'm not sure what day are they wanting it by. Yeah, bring it in by Wednesday. So everything's by Wednesday, okay? Okay, sounds good. And let's see. May has her eyes fixed. She can see now. And then there was no miraculous healing involved, unfortunately. You know, I mean, we could have advertised if it had been miraculous, but couldn't do it. We've got some people who are going to be traveling today, so we need to keep them in our prayers. Margaret and Philip and Richard are all going to go down south for Christmas, so we'll keep them. But anyway, let's have a word of prayer, and then we'll get into. I'll wait. Don't worry. Don't. I was stretching it. Don't fall, please. Please don't fall. She was almost there when I said it, and she suddenly sped up, and I thought, oh no, she's going to... Speedy Gonzalez, don't do that now. Philip, would you mind leading us in a prayer? Revelation chapter 13. The very first thing we're going to have to do in Revelation 13 is notice and remind ourselves that the chapter divisions were added later, okay? And that therefore we really should pay them almost no attention. And it's very important we do that in chapter 13 because chapter 13 has a very very distinct connection to chapter 12. Look at the last verse of chapter 12. All right? And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Now, that's us. Okay? So, that's the connection to chapter 13. And the connection is even stronger with some additional manuscript evidence that has been uncovered since the publication of the King James Bible. And look at Revelation chapter 13 and verse 1. The New King James goes right along with the King James and retains the same choices that they made. And it reads, "Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea." All right? There are two eyes there in the King James Version, all right? But if you read in the New American Standard or the American Standard or the Revised Standard or in the New International Version, you will not read, "And then I stood on the shore of the sea." That is, what does yours say, Carl? You've got the NIV. Right. Now, right after that, it does say, "And I saw," right?
Yes.
Okay. The reason there's this question is because of manuscript evidence. John is witnessing everything. Okay, so John sees all that's occurring. And the eye, when it says, I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, is very specifically John. Okay? But the first eye, probably, as the later manuscript evidence suggests, should be he. And it's tied grammatically to the previous sentence in chapter 12, and the dragon was enraged with a woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, then he stood on the sand of the sea. It's a direct connection to verse 17 in chapter 12. All right? Because this dragon, he is identified as the he, okay? And this he goes to the sea for a purpose. What he's going to do is he's going to summon a beast that's going to rise out of the sea. So he is summoning this beast that comes out of the sea. Now John is what? John is watching. So John is seeing that, but it really should be then he, the dragon, stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw, John, a beast rising up out of the sea. Okay? So it is a deliberate connection to verse 17 in chapter 12. And honestly, the manuscript evidence is basically overwhelming. Most of the time, the manuscript evidence is of something that's like this is not, you know, it's kind of wishy-washy as to which, if there's a change. But this time, the evidence is overwhelmingly, it's he. And even the manuscripts that the King James translators used in 1611, many of them had he, but they put I because they were paying more attention to the chapter divisions, and they knew that there was an I in the next verse. And they look and they says, well, who is the he there? And they thought, well, the next line says I, so let's make it more clear for people. We'll put I. Then I stood, I and I saw. But no, it's a he. The he is the dragon. Okay? So keep that in mind. And this dragon is going to do what? What's his purpose?
He's going to devour or torment their offspring.
Okay. He's actually going to... There's a phrase in verse 17. He's going to do what? He's going to make war. Okay? So what he's going to do is he's going to make war, and how he's going to make war is what chapter 13 is all about. Okay? Go ahead, Carl.
The dragon eye is put on shore. I being John is correct.
Right. I being John is correct. But the dragon stood on the sand of the sea, and John sees then a beast rising up. So yeah, the eye is still John in the next line of verse 1. But the he is the dragon. The dragon, see, there is a direct connection to the beast with the dragon. And this connection is absolute that we have to see. Okay? So let's take a look. Now we've got that in mind. Let's read. Chapter 13 basically divides itself into two sections. Section 1 goes from verse 1 through verse 9. Section 2 goes from through verse 10. Section 2 goes from verse 11 through verse 18. Okay? So let's take a look at the first section of chapter 13, and then we'll dig a little bit further. Okay? Then I stood on the sand, then he stood on the sand. of the sea. And I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now, the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast, so they worshipped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with his saints and to overcome them, and authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. All right. Now, several things are in here that are extremely important for us to understand. One of the things we need to understand is that there is a direct similarity, a direct connection and a strong similarity to Daniel chapter 7, verses 1 through 7. So we're going to put that up here, and we're going to look at that in just a moment. So you might go ahead and be turning to there, 1 through 7 of Daniel chapter 7. But there is a difference, and the difference is very clear when we remember things that have gone before, specifically verse 9. Now, verse 9 has got to be considered before we turn to Daniel chapter 7. Look at verse 9. What does verse 9 say? If anyone has an ear, he who has an ear, let him hear. We've seen this phrase before during the letters to the seven churches. Every time we saw that phrase, which originated with Jesus in the Gospels, it was a phrase that Jesus uttered as he was using what to teach? Parables. So verse 9 tells us that everything that we have here should be understood in the same manner as the parables. Now, the reason that's important for us is because parables are symbols. It's a story with a heavenly meaning and an earthly application. All right? So they're symbols. They're symbolic. So verse 9 is emphasizing that everything we're looking at is symbolic. Now, the reason we need to keep that in mind, and why John puts this, why the Holy Spirit has John put this here in this section, and he'll do the same thing if you look down to verse 18. The reason he puts it here is because we are to remember that we're looking at a symbol, symbolic meaning. And that's important because in Daniel 7, 1 through 7, we're looking at something that is symbols, but symbols that have a real earthly meaning. Here we're looking at symbols, but symbols that remain symbolic, not with a real earthly meaning. And by that I mean this. If you go to Daniel chapter 7, Daniel is given a vision, and the vision that Daniel is given is of events that are going to take place between the time that Daniel lives and the time that Jesus Christ comes to dwell on the earth. All right? And Daniel has this dream during the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. And he writes down the dream, and he does not understand what the dream is, and so his dream gets interpreted for him later on in about verse 15 or so of Daniel chapter 7. But what Daniel gets delivered here in this dream is that he's going to see that he's going to be given basically a timetable. That's Daniel's purpose. That's the purpose for Daniel's vision. A timetable for the coming of Jesus Christ. And this timetable is important for Daniel, because Daniel is, you know, all of the people are in captivity. They're wondering what's going to happen to them as a people. Has God forgotten them? Has God abandoned them? Are they not part of God's plan of redemption any longer? And Daniel is getting confirmation as a prophet of God that you're still a part of the plan of salvation. You're still a part of my plan of redemption. And this has to take place before. So let's take a look. Daniel chapter 7. Verses 1 through 7. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. It's kind of an odd way of saying it, isn't it? He had visions of his head while on his bed. All right? Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. Now, the Great Sea is probably what? Yeah, the Mediterranean. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And suddenly another beast, the second like a bear, it was raised up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. After this I looked, and there was another like a leopard who had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its teeth. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. It was considering the horn. I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. And then it goes on from there. All right? But skip on down to chapter, to verse 15 and following, okay? I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. Now, the one who's near is an angel who is going to tell him the meaning of God's vision that he's been given. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. Those great beasts, which are four kings which arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I wish to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured broken pieces and trampled the residue with its feet. And the 10 horns and so forth. Look down to verse 23. The fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it in pieces. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall rise after them. He shall be different from the first ones, and shall subdue three kings. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. Alright, so we have four beasts. And these four beasts are kingdoms. Okay? Now the kingdoms that they are the kingdom of Babylon, the kingdom of Persia, and the kingdom of Greece, and the kingdom of Rome. All right? Those are the four kingdoms in that order. And it was during the kingdom of Rome that Jesus came. Okay? But while, and Jesus comes, and he's the small horn that's pictured on the beast, but there are some things that are pictured as well that go along with it. And this kingdom changes into another kingdom, okay? And this other kingdom will continue to make war, or shall grieve and persecute the saints of the Most High for a time and times and half a time, which is the same symbol that we've seen in Revelation, the 42 months, the 1,260 days. It's a period of despair. But what all this is talking about in Daniel, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot talking about Daniel's thing here, is that these four kingdoms help us give a timetable for the coming of Jesus and then the arising of something that will cause ongoing trouble for those who want to simply follow Jesus. Okay, go ahead, Mary. Yes. Now, if you're going to go with the popular interpretation, they're going to say that there's a future ruler, a single person who's going to be an antichrist, and they're going to talk about 10 kingdoms of Europe. They're going to be united. But this is symbols. And I think that kingdom of Rome that gets changed and becomes something else, what do you think that is? We've talked about it before. What is in Rome now? The Catholic Church. The Roman Empire actually became controlled in part by the Roman Catholic Church. And the Roman Catholic Church set itself against simple New Testament Christianity. Now, that makes a lot of people upset because most people think Roman Catholics are what? Well, they think that they're Christians. You know, they assume that they're Christians. And while there are no doubt people within the Catholic Church who want to follow Jesus and who believe that they're following Jesus, the fact of the matter is they have been deceived. They've been deceived. So Daniel is giving us a specific timetable. But now, if you get back over to Revelation, Revelation is not concerned with a timetable. All right? As we've looked at it, it's never specified a time frame. It's always given things in general. And the reason that's important for us to understand is because evil continually reoccurs. You know, I mean, it continually happens. And the same patterns happen again and again and again and again. And this is a picture of this whole time frame from the ascension of Jesus back to heaven and his return. And that's all this time period is pictured. And in Revelation 13, you've got a general picture of how things are going, but you don't have a specific. You have a general. And in fact, what you've got, this beast that is pictured here with the seven heads and the ten horns and all of this, this beast is a conglomeration of all of the beasts that are pictured in Daniel's thing. Notice it's got Daniel had what? A lion, a leopard, a bear, and what was the other one? I forgot. So I'm going to go back. Lion, a leopard, and a bear. Oh my. I watched The Wizard of Oz last night. Sorry. Well, anyway, this beast that comes out of the sea has the same things. Although instead of being four separate beasts, it's got parts of them. Yes, go ahead. Just a dreadful beast. That's right. There's not a specific image, is there? So, and here you've got a leopard. You've got a beast like a leopard with feet like that of a bear, a mouth like that of a lion. That's three, but yet it's the same three that were there in Daniel. But this is not, but they're not individuals. They're not a kingdom. And in fact, unless Daniel had been told specifically that these represent kingdoms on earth, he would not have interpreted them as kingdoms. We are not told that these are kingdoms on earth either. It's not specific kingdoms, but we're told that this is symbols of the kind of power that Satan is going to wield. See, what happens here is that Satan, the dragon, remember, we only know that the dragon is Satan because what did John tell us in chapter 12? He said, the dragon is Satan. You know? I mean, he did. So we know what the symbol for dragon is. We know who that is. So the Satan, the he, rises up beast out of the sea, and we get numbers, okay? First of all, he's got seven heads. What's the word seven? What's the number seven mean? Seven means complete. So he's a complete representation. Well, actually, seven is the divine number, right? I mean, he's divinely. So it's a picture that pictures him as being allowed to do this. Go ahead.
You told me last week that you were going to tell me the difference between Satan and the
kingdom. Yes. And I didn't put it together. So I will email that to you. Okay. But seven is the divine number, and it means that, you know, there's a sense of divineness or in this. Okay? But it's coupled, seven is coupled with what? The number what? Here. The number ten. Which is, ten is what? Ten is completeness. It is, so this is divinely complete, all right? Is the idea that the numbers give it out. And the reason it's done that way is because the beast, while it's been summoned and or being empowered by the dragon still has to get permission from who? From God. Look at verse 7. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. Alright? It was granted to him. Who did the granting? God did, yeah. God did the granting. And the reason God does the granting is because he's using the dragon and his effort to make war, he's using that as a means of two things. Number one, refining Christians. In other words, it's like going through a metalsmith putting the metal through a refining fire. It makes it what? Makes it pure. So that's part of what it is. Christians are being put through the refining fire of this world so that we can be made more pure. Okay? But it's also the context in which we use to reach out to the lost. Because if there's a war going on and people understand there's a war and people can be made aware that this, the source of this power is Satan, is satanic, what hopefully will occur is that people will listen to the gospel message and be what? And be saved, right? So that's part of the reason why it's being done. Now, verse 7 here also says that he gave power to make war with the saints, but also power to do what? Overcome them. Now, we've read about overcoming before in chapter 12. What did chapter 12 say about overcoming? Anybody remember? Go back up to about verse 10. Actually, specifically verse 11, but verse 10 gives you the context. Now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of His Christ have come for the accuser of our brethren who accused them before our God day and night has been cast down, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. In other words, that's a picture of what's going on in chapter 13. Okay? When it says that he gave them power to overcome, it's actually probably a better way of translating it and understanding it. He gave them power. It granted him power or authority to try to overcome them. Okay? In other words, the picture here is that, all right, God has granted to Satan the ability to try to overcome Christians. And Christians will be overcome unless what? Unless they're strong in the faith. Unless they overcome him by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. In other words, this is part of the ongoing thing, the refining process. If Christians are lackadaisical and don't live the way they're supposed to, and don't embrace the Word of God and don't do a whole lot of other things, then what has enough power to actually overcome them? Satan has enough power to overcome them if they're not careful. But he cannot overcome them if they are what? If they're strong in the faith. If they're strong in the faith, they cannot be overcome. But so this is a winnowing process, if you will. A system in place to help either strengthen or cause people to go by the wayside. Jesus talked about this. Remember the parable of the soils? He had four kinds of soils. All right, you had soil that fell on the wayside or the pathway, right? And immediately Satan snatched up the seed, which was the Word of God, so that they would not be saved. Okay, that's the majority of the world. Just snatched it up. But now, the next two kinds of soil, one was rocky soil. The seed falls in, it springs up, and when the sun comes out, what happens to the plants? It dies because it withers, having no root. having no root, remember? That's the picture of someone being overcome by the world. Okay? The third kind of soil was soil that had tares in it, or weeds, or thorns in it. Okay? And it sprang up, but what happened to the seed? It was choked out by the thorns, which Jesus described or identified as being the worries and things of what? The cares and worries of this world. So there were three of the four soils. What happened to them?
They missed the boat.
They didn't make it, did they? And the picture is that this world works against them. Now, the one that was in good soil, they took root, and what happened? It flourished, and they reproduced, and some of them had 30%, some of them had 60%, and some of them had 100% yield. So there's a yielding process, and it's different because, you know, different people have different talents and things like that. We don't expect a 30% person to produce like a 100% person, or we shouldn't, but we do know that they are what? They're Christians. They're faithful Christians. To the end, they will be among those who go to heaven. That's the picture we get here in Revelation, is that there's a war going on. There is this beast that has power and authority and all of this. And what he's doing is he's waging war specifically against Christians. But his system, the picture we get, is that he works through the system of the world, the systems of the world. And the systems of the world are the symbols are drawn from Daniel and specific countries. And the idea behind them is that we can look and we can see similarities in these four systems that attack us today. For instance, Babylon was a country that took things by force. Okay? So we see people in this world who try to take things by force, even to today, right? Persia was more enlightened. They took people by virtue of law, okay, and conquering, but they were very, very a mystical-oriented kind of system based upon, a kind of almost a religious system, okay? Do we have religious systems today that still that try to take over? That are not in any way connected to Christianity or we do. Greece is considered to be the modern source of modern thinking, logic and science and law. Is the way that we think and way we're taught to think in our culture is very Greek. Okay? Rome morphs into what? Into religion. Religion that looks like it's Christian, but it's really not Christian. Its way of thinking is very Greek, but it's the denominational world, I think. So we've got a picture here of the four kinds of things that attack the Christians today. We've got science. I'm going to put denominations. Persia, I'm going to put mysticism. And Babylon, I'm going to put force. Okay? Mysticism, force, science, and denominationalism are all attacking Christianity. Go ahead.
It looks to me like it's all government-based.
Yeah, I think so. Right. And government comes from God, you know. That's part of the picture here. This all happens with God's what? God's permission. But when we begin to see this, we begin to see the very things that we have to watch out against. You see? Yeah, for instance, science. We have what's the number one scientific teaching that stands against Scripture? Evolution. Is it taught as, now they say it's the theory of evolution, but is it taught as a theory today? What happens when someone tries to teach a faith-based approach to science in our country? That's right. Government steps in and shuts it down. Government will not allow the teaching of a faith-based approach to science. Why? Because who is the government? Who is controlling the government's desire? Satan is. Because it goes against what? It's a way of making war against what? Against Christians. Okay? And all of this is the same thing. And throughout, I mean, that's just one example. That's what's being pictured here in this section. There's this summoning of this power, and notice that it talks about blaspheming and all of those type of things. You know, the idea behind it is that the government, the power, the beast is placing itself in place of who? In place of God. Yeah. In fact, let's skip down to verse 6 real quick. He opened his mouth, this is the beast, his mouth to blaspheme against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. Let's take a look at that. Now, his name is a reference to what? Okay, it's the name of God, but let me give you a hint. Is it Colossians? I think it's Colossians. Do all in the name of the Lord. Okay? So when you read about His name, what are you talking about? His power and authority. That's right. So He is going to blaspheme against the power and authority of God. That's not the number one thing there. All right? His tabernacle. Now, what is a tabernacle? It's a holy place. Okay. Yeah. What? It's a building. It's not a building. It's literally a. What was a tabernacle? No, it's not a church. It was a dwelling place of God. But what's the difference between a tabernacle and the temple? The tabernacle was temporary. Well, so was the temple. But what's the difference?
One moved around.
One was a tent and one was a building. Okay? All right. So it was a tent where God dwelled. Okay? Turn with me to John chapter 1. John chapter 1. Look at verse 14. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Okay?
Double check that.
John chapter 1, verse 14. Oh, come on. Yes. The word here is skenu, a verb meaning to live, dwell in a tent or a tabernacle. It's a verb, so it literally is the Word became flesh and tabernacled among us. It's a verb. You want to translate it in a way that captures the meaning, that would be the way we would translate it. The Word became flesh and dwelt, or tabernacled, among us. So, keep that in mind. John wrote the same book, the same writers in both places, right? And so, his tabernacle is talking specifically about who? About Jesus Christ. His tabernacle. So, he's going to make war against the authority of God. He's going to make war against his Christ. He's going to make war against those who dwell in heaven. Now, who's that? That's us. Because even though we live on the earth, our citizenship is where? In heaven. So, he's making the beast is making war against three things. The authority and power of God, his Christ, and us. Those are the three things that he's making war against. Okay? And I've run out of time. Any questions? Or have I totally made it impossible? All right, well, we'll try to put some of this. The reason I didn't have a PowerPoint today is because it was hard to put this into a PowerPoint. I couldn't figure out how to do it exactly, so that's why I didn't do a PowerPoint. Instead, I did a Blackboard. But what we need to understand is that there's all of this is tied together. We'll keep looking at it a little bit more. Thank you very much for the class. Appreciate it.